whoa, like, man, I wish I could get my drums to sound like that. The easiest way to get there is like crank up a PA system that loud and mic it up kind of thing. It could be really cool.
This is the Self-Recording Band Podcast, the show where we help you make exciting records on your own, wherever you are, DIY style. Let's go. Hello and welcome to the Self-Recording Band Podcast. I'm your host, Benedict Tyne, and I'm here with my co-host, Malcolm Owen Flood, who I bet is doing pretty fantastic because he's got exciting news to share. Hi, Malcolm. I bet you're doing very well.
I got engaged over the weekend. I'm stoked. I've been, I should know this, but I think me and my girlfriend Beth have been together for 7 years about now. So it was kind of overdue, really. And we went for it.
That's so awesome. Like, congrats. And I got a video from Malcolm, or we in our mastermind group got a video from him. And I didn't expect it at all. I just saw the video and I was like, what? I don't know. I just clicked it and then I heard some guitar music. And then suddenly, like, I see Malcolm on his knees and I'm like, yo. That's like that's actually pretty exciting news, and so stoked for you.
It was a big moment. Yeah, we had like some really important friends there for kind of around, and my buddy Rob, an old bandmate of mine, was able to be there and kind of whip out a guitar that he'd hidden just like right at the right moment. So my fiance now, first time I've actually had to say that right on. Beth was just like so surprised. She was just utterly in shock. It was awesome.
Oh, that's the best thing. Yeah, you got to get used to that. I think I called my wife my girlfriend for a long time before I finally got used to it. So yeah,
Right on.
That's part of it. Okay, so yeah, there's not much I can add to this. This is the best news we ever had on the podcast, I think. the only thing I can say is, and I only like, it's not nearly as exciting, but I have to say it because we mentioned it on the podcast already. My wife actually decided that we need to get some Indian runner ducks now again that we've been talking about. So we actually have a pair of ducks now.
And, no way.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and they are like we don't have them yet. I think she's gonna get them this week, but we know them already. We saw them already. So yeah,
are they gonna have names?
Yeah, it's like German names. They are called, they already have names. They are called Lise and Lotte. So we're gonna keep that. They're going to run around our garden and eat snails, hopefully.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah, hopefully not the garden, just the snails, right?
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. Yeah, but usually they do. Yeah, okay. That's that. Before we like lose the rest of the audience now, I want to tell you real quick what this episode is about, because today we are going to talk about how to make your productions more exciting and add vibe and character to them by using creative reamping techniques. And we're going to show you what that actually means, what that is, and we're going to give you some practical examples of things you can do and how to actually do that. And it's something that's really cool to do because, I mean, nobody wants to sound like everyone else, right? And many records nowadays kind of sound the same in some ways because people use the same sample libraries, they use the same guitar amp sims or whatever. Certain recording techniques are very popular, and I'm not saying that all records sound the same, not at all, but everyone wants to sound unique. And the more templates and presets and software and samples and stuff we use, the more likely we are to create stuff that's a little, normal or like average. And with those creative reamping techniques that we're going to talk about, you can add flavor and vibe and things to your productions that are totally unique to you and your songs. And that's the coolest thing about it. And you're totally free. There are no rules. But we're going to give you some practical examples of it. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. It's just like a really fun way to switch it up and get results that are going to be totally unique. That's why we thought it'd be fun. Like normally we're kind of talking about fundamental recording techniques that are just like, you know, we're always nail the basics first and then explore. And if you're looking to explore, this is like such a great kind of place to jump into. If you have a guitarist in your band, if you're not the guitarist and you have a band, the guitarist in your band almost definitely has like dozens of guitar pedals. It's like kind of a thing. Any guitarist is addicted to pedals.
Yeah.
And now you can actually put them to some good use.
Yes, exactly. And that's the exciting thing about it as well, is like when you hear the term reamping, you probably think about guitars. And we are actually not going to talk about guitars as much in this episode. We're going to talk about using guitar gear and guitar pedals and effects and like cheap stuff that you have that you can use creatively, but not on actual guitars, but on other things like vocals and drums, especially, mm-hmm. because we feel like these are instruments that you can really make exciting and unique sounding by using those tools in a kind of unconventional way. So let's start by maybe explaining what reamping actually is technically and how it works. So how would you go about it if you wanted to use a guitar pedal on a vocal or drum kit or piece of the kit?
Right. Well, I guess there's kind of reamping in real time and not in real time, but we're talking about after the fact, I think, for the most part, right? So the challenge comes in that you need to get your signal out of your DAW, out of your interface, and into these guitar pedals, and then back into your computer. So really, that's what we need to break down to understand how to creatively reamp things like a vocal or drums or whatever you're trying to send through these pedals. And there are these things called reamp boxes, which would be what you need for this, ideally. Like, I think you can use a DI, right? But I would definitely recommend getting a reamp box. It's going to be a better fit, more correct, and have some extra features that'll probably be useful. Like my reamp box has like a gain knob on it, so you can kind of hit the gear, like the pedals in this case, how you need to, like to taste, I guess. And there's like, you know, ground lifts and all sorts of stuff. So you got to come out of your interface. Normally you do that by setting like an aux or a bus out of one of the outputs. And then you send the track. So let's say we're going to send a lead vocal out, send it out of that, come out of the actual hardware output of your interface into this reamp box. And then from that reamp box, you should be able to now use a guitar cable to go right into a guitar pedal, or two or three, as many as you want. And then out of that guitar pedal, probably into an amplifier. And then you just mic up the amplifier, re-record that back in. You also could go into like a DI and then go direct back in, you know, like, or you could probably even go back into the high Z input of your interface if you really wanted to. It really depends on what you're trying to achieve. But the main core concept is just getting out into a reamp box, which is going to get the signal converted to the right impedance so that it's going to actually work with these guitar pedals how it's meant to. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
I feel like it was a long-winded response.
No, absolutely. If it's not an actual guitar, you could, and depending on the effect you're using, you could theoretically just even use the line signal, send it through and see what happens. And like you cannot damage anything usually, so you don't need the reamp box. But I would also recommend using one, just because then you know that the pedal does exactly what it's supposed to do and you have control over it. So if you just send out, like if you go out off the line output of your interface and into the pedal directly, it could work, but it could also be that the frequency response is not the same. Like you have like, maybe you overdrive the pedal or you clip it or whatever. Like it could be cool, but it also could be not, and it's pretty unpredictable. So to get more predictable results and to make sure everything works the way it's supposed to, I would also recommend getting a reamp box, definitely. The cheaper option here is like using a DI in reverse, but that's kind of not the same thing. I've heard comparisons where people use that and it worked, but I've also heard examples where people got noise problems or level problems, and it's like, I'd go with the real thing and go with the reamp box, just as Malcolm said. But yeah. If you don't have one and want to try it right now, you cannot damage anything. Just like I would start with keeping the level really low, go out of the line output, plug it directly into the pedal, slowly raise the volume and see what happens. And if it's cool, it's cool. So
yeah. Yeah, just this try. Is a very like break the rules, could work situation. Because you're kind of in effect already breaking the rules. You're now using guitar pedals on other instruments. Is really what we're trying to do here. There's a band that comes to mind called The Set, which was a pretty successful band in Canada. And their singer had this giant pedal board attached to his mic stand. So it was like kind of up at like hand level for him. So he could like be stomping stop guitar stomp boxes. They were all guitar pedals, I'm pretty sure. While he's singing, you know, so you'd have like this modulator that made him sound like he was in a fishbowl or something, like a tremolo and like reverbs, big delay throws that, you know, he would like manually throw in. So he was like manually mixing all his vocal effects, octaves and harmonies and stuff like that.
Really?
While he was singing. And that was like their thing. It was amazing to watch. And you can do that live with this kind of stuff, but you can also do it in the studio and really get unique effects into your songs.
Yes. And what I really like about this is that people like the example that you just mentioned, like they use guitar pedals typically for that instead of like there are some vocal effects pedals and multi effects and stuff like that. But mm-hmm. I think it's really cool to use vibey stuff and not because many of those multi effects or vocal pedals, they just try to do what plugins do. Like they try to make a vocal mix that you can have on stage like instantly out of a pedal. Oftentimes at least there are reverbs, delays, doublers, whatever, chorus effects. But you can do that in the DAW and that's usually not as spectacular. But using like vibey guitar effects, that's where the magic is. Like guitar delays, mm-hmm. analog delays, some weird reverbs or like overdrive, distortion, stuff like that. That's what's really cool about it. And also combining that in like this pedal board that you just mentioned, always like you will always end up with a very unique combination, very unique sound that you just cannot replicate, and it's like unique to you. Only you have this combination and the gain staging and everything you used, and whatever you capture coming out of that pedal board will be totally unique to you. So
definitely it's even more powerful in the recording world than it is live, because things like distortion and stuff like that on a vocal are just going to be like feedback city, right?
Yes.
The sound guy's just gonna like leave and ditch you. But in the studio, like, you know, use headphones or whatever, you're gonna be in control and you can like get really wild and just absolutely demolish your source signal and make some really cool effects. So like vocally, some ideas that come to mind would be like I remember like early 2000s metalcore stuff having like the radio voice breakdown, you know, like it just goes to like somebody speaking through like a megaphone or something like that. That'd be like really cool sounding through guitar pedals. And you can do all these things in the DAW, but it just does sound different. I think because, like Benny said, these pedals are designed for guitars, not for stuff like vocals. So they react in ways that you're not expecting, and it can be very cool.
Yeah. And especially with things like that, because like the radio voice or megaphone effects, telephone effects, stuff like that, like it's so overused and so cliche sometimes that especially if you want to, but sometimes it fits the song, and especially if you want to do something like that, you want to make sure it sounds somewhat unique or like it has some character or something, yeah, that's special about it, because yeah, it's really dangerous and can be pretty cheesy to put stuff like that in. But yeah, and that's where guitar pedals and unique sounds are the way to go, in my opinion, because like the other option, and that's what people do all the time, is just you put a low pass and a high pass filter on it and whatever stock overdrive you have in your DAW or something like that, and then it sounds like a telephone or megaphone. But that's the boring stuff. A guitar mm-hmm. pedal is way cooler and much more unpredictable. Yeah,
it's going to be like, number one, it's going to be more fun to actually like create with you and your band or whoever you're recording with. Like, it's actually like this experience and people are grabbing knobs in real time. And that is a really cool thing about it. It's so easy to like have somebody or yourself managing the knobs on the pedal while you're recording. So you can kind of like automate a pass as you go, which is super, super fun. Yeah. But the other thing is like with like delays, especially and stuff like that, everybody's always using the same one. Like almost every pro recording engineer I know, or mix engineer I know, uses Echo Boy by Soundtoys for a vocal delay. It's just like the bee's knees.
Yeah.
And it's great, but everybody uses it. So it's like, okay, it's starting to become a sound that's just like the status quo. So if you can mix it up, it's just another way to stand out.
Hey friend, this is Benedict from theselfrecordingband.com, and if you are producing your own songs, I have a question for you. Do you ever listen to your music and feel like something is just off? Maybe the drums sound weak, or the guitar tone bothers you, maybe the vocals don't really cut through the mix, or the whole thing just doesn't sound finished and professional, but you can't really put your finger on it? I know you want to release big, punchy, professional sounding songs, right? The type of authentic, unique art that connects with your audience on a deep level. But you're just not sure what's missing with your recordings. Somehow you just can't connect all the dots. And I get it, the amount of things to learn and all the conflicting information out there can be really overwhelming. Especially if you're a lone wolf trying to figure it all out on your own, right? Now here's the good news. Whether you've been self-recording for years, or you're just setting up your first home studio, I want to offer you my personal one-on-one help. As long as you are determined to put in the work, I'm offering a limited amount of free one-on-one coaching calls with me. On this hour-long call, we'll dive deep into your recordings and create a personalized roadmap for you to finally solve the issues you're struggling with so that you can release music that you'll be proud of forever. If you are ready to see and believe that it's actually possible to achieve your goals and make the records you've always wanted to make, then go to theselfrecordingband.com/call and apply for one of my limited coaching spots. I can assure you that making exciting and successful DIY records is very doable. We've done it, lots of other people have done it, you can do it as well. Talk soon. theselfrecordingband.com/call.
Yeah, totally. And delay throws can be especially cool sounding, because there are some guitar pedals that do special things. There are some analog delays that are not even expensive that I really love, and that you cannot do that in the DAW. They just have a sound, and I don't know why, but I've always loved when recording guitars, I always loved tracking and committing to the actual delay pedal more than doing it afterwards. Because I don't know, just because of that, because it has a certain vibe to it, and I just love analog delays. I don't know. It's just the way it is.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
for vocals, well, it's also like a thing that's just cool.
With guitars especially, it sounds really different, you know, because like it's either placed into the mix after it's been recorded, and that means that it's not reacting with the room or with the microphones or the speakers or anything like that. It's just like, it's after the fact. So it's, you know, there's really cool things I like about that. Like it can be incredibly stereo and stuff like that. But when you throw it out into the room and like actually through the amplifier, now that delay kind of has like this tone imprint of whatever the guitar was also going through. It's a totally different sound. And yeah, I think it's generally more vibey.
Yeah.
to print it. You're right.
Totally. And I think especially with delay throws, with when like specific parts of a song where the band wants a delay throw, an audible like delay in there, it can be pretty difficult, and it's a lot of back and forth often, because they will send you, I mean me as a mixer in that case, they sent me the dry vocal and then a note where they explain whether when I have the delay throw, and then I do what I interpret, like the way I interpret this note, and I put the delay throw in there and make it sound cool, at least I think it sounds cool, and then I send it to the band, and then they're like, yeah, that's kind of cool, but not actually what we thought, what we wanted. Can you do like one more, or like more feedback or less feedback, right? Or can you have, like, make it more lo-fi or more whatever? And then we go back and forth a couple of times until I exactly nail what they initially thought. And it's so much easier if you just do that and just send it along with your vocal. You can do that on a separate track so that you don't like commit to something that doesn't work. But just include it in the multitrack and send it to the mixer, because if it's great, you can just use it, and you're not wasting time trying to figure out what the initial idea was. Just do it. Commit to it. Come up with a cool, unique sound, and then let's get that into the mix. And I loved getting like committed like delay throws from bands. That's just something I really appreciate when people do that. And you might be wondering why we are telling you to reamp that stuff, because that's what I just thought while we're talking about this, because you could just record through those pedals, right? So before we move on with other examples, I'd like to ask you, Mark, what's the advantage of like reamping that instead of just singing right through the pedal chain, for example?
Right. Well, I mean, stuff like delay throws, for example, are probably momentary instances where you want it. You probably don't want it through the whole song. And there is an added flexibility now if you were to reamp, because you could also send the mixer the dry signal as well. So you could be like this, but we want a more stereo, you know, something like that. And then the mixer would now have the ability to play with that a little bit, you know, and expand on the idea using the dry signal if they needed to. Those are the two that come to mind. Is that what you were getting at?
Yeah, totally. And also, but I think there's another advantage, because it's more fun and it's a creative thing to do when you're sitting together in front of the speakers and tweaking the pedals. Like you, like one guy or girl is the engineer, the producer, and then there's the singer, and they sit in front of the DAW and they hear the recorded vocals and they have the pedals in front of them, and then they can tweak it together and come up with cool ideas. While that's just a very fun thing to do and a very creative thing to do.
Yes.
So you record your vocals. You probably, as you said, don't want to, most of the effects, you don't want to have them throughout the whole song, but it's more like certain like ear candy thing in certain parts. And yeah, you have the dry vocal. You can use that, and it's a kind of a safety thing. But also it's like probably going to be the main vocal take. And then you can just do whatever you want, like, and put up all these pedals in front of you and just play with it and automate it as you go and do it in real time. And you can like sit there and use, if the whole band is there, you can basically use, I don't know, 10 hands and simultaneously turn all the knobs and come up with cool things. And that's just so fun to do. And while you're tracking, you should actually focus on the performance more than turning the knobs. So
absolutely,
I think when you're tracking, you should be totally focusing on the vocal performance, on the vibe, the feeling of the actual, what the person is singing, and then once you got that, you can focus on the tone and stuff. The only exception for me would be if those pedals and effects you're creating are sort of interacting with the singer. If that's the case, that can be the case with guitars often, with delays and stuff. So if that's the case, if it becomes part of the performance, then you have to figure out a way to do it in real time, and maybe you can split it just so you have the safety measure of a dry track. But that's the only exception. But if it's not crucial to the actual singing, the actual performance, I would do that as a separate step. That's why we're saying reamping. And I would do it before mixing. I would do it and then send that to the mixer. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's a fantastic point. Creativity can get in the way of productivity if you're not careful, which is like the hallmark of a good producer is like somebody that knows when to turn off the tap and be like, we're going to turn the creativity tap back on in a second, guys. We just have to get this down. And to talk about what you were just saying with, if it's integral to the performance, you can still just, you know, go through the song dry and then have the singer also lay down a wet performance as well. You know, like just go in and punch in that part kind of thing with the effects, in addition to the dry one as well. So you don't have to I would still just like focus on getting the vocal down, then break out the pedals, get whatever you need, and then you can, you know, go into reamping from there.
Yeah, agreed. That's that. I just wanted to get that in there, because people might be wondering, why the hell should we reamp stuff, and what isn't that part of mixing? Or aren't we supposed to record or whatever? So just so that people are not confused.
Right.
All right. So we have to sum it up, we have the radio voice, we have the delay throws when you're talking about vocals. What other vocal examples could you think of?
Like, it's limitless. if you got a pedal, you can make it happen. You know, I've got an octave pedal that can be pretty fun. Like, if anybody's got a Pog at home, which I actually don't have, but I would like, they can do like octaves up, octaves down, whatever, you know. It can make your voice sound like an organ if you really want. It's incredible.
Oh, yeah.
So like, you can do that kind of stuff, you know, more modulated stuff like tremolo or coarse or like a rotary speaker kind of effect. You know, that stuff can be so interesting. And you can also do this as layers, you know, like maybe you have your lead vocal holding like this big epic note in the chorus, but you've also got a not like an overdub layer of it, like with a rotary speaker being thrown around the room, you know. You can just do stuff that is not even like, you can't even really do that in the DAW very well. Like, I've never found a good rotary plugin. If somebody's got a good rotary plugin, send it to me. Let me know.
Yeah, that's totally true. Yeah, that's a great application I haven't thought of, but that's totally true. That can be fun. Yeah, distortion comes to mind. Like, yeah, all sorts of overdrive and distortion. Like, obviously, guitar distortion pedals, there are great sounding ones, and you can use them on your vocal. You can combine them with like EQs or filters or stuff. You can really, it's limitless because, I can think of so many things. Because you could just like filter out the top end and just distort the low end of the vocal and then mix it in. Or you can like make a very narrow mid-range band and distort that and mix it in with the vocal. You can do all sorts of cool things. You can distort the delays, which is a pretty cool thing that I love to do sometimes. Like a lo-fi overdriven delay can sound pretty great. I think the big ones for me are delays and distortion stuff, but yeah, the more creative, like rotary and modulating things, they can be fun as well too. I think I don't use them as often because in the genres that I work the most, like in the heavier stuff or the punk rock and stuff like that, I don't know. Things are pretty basic most of the time. Like,
right.
There are not as many like modulating things, but that doesn't mean you can't use them. Maybe it would be cool if you would do that more often. So,
I feel like, I guess we should mention real quick, just going back to the technical stuff, that you do need to have line outputs on your interface. So if you've got, there's some interfaces that just can't do this.
The speaker outputs are line outputs, right? But your speakers are connected to them. So, but you could use, so for example, with my, where is it? I don't have it in front of me right now. But my two-channel interface that I have doesn't have additional lineouts. It has two speaker outputs. Like, these are lineouts, lineout one and two, where you connect your speakers. And then on the front, there's a headphone output. And it's the same mix on the headphone outs and the speaker outs. So you could theoretically, like, use the lineouts, don't connect speakers, use those lineouts to send stuff out and then back in the front. And then, but you couldn't really monitor the whole thing because you would have to send out the whatever you're reamping through the main outs, and that would also be on your headphones. So there's certainly a way to do it, but it's less fun because you probably want to monitor the whole thing in context. So it's a little difficult to do with those two-channel interfaces, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the reamping problem in general. Like, reamping without a line out is just difficult to do. So you want to have a four channel interface at least for that, I think. So you have like, or four outputs or something. So you have a pair where you can. So you want to basically have two separate mixes. That's the point here. You want to have one mix that's just always your main out, your monitor mix, and then you want to have additional available line outs where you can send whatever you want out of the interface.
A lot of interfaces have that, but not all of them. So just worth mentioning.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that's a good overview of vocals.
Yeah, I think so. So let's move on to drums. This is also really fun. And like, this is probably the thing that people don't think about as much, because acoustic drums are, like many people think about it as just an acoustic instrument, but there are cool things you can do with drums and reamping drums. What's the first thing you would do, Malcolm? Or try?
Oh man, yeah. There's tons of stuff you can do. Actually, the first thing I want to talk about is drum samples, because we've talked a lot about drum samples on this podcast. Actually, we both love using them and making them sound cool. And this goes back to like, okay, well, how do you make your mix stand out and not sound cookie cutter? Especially if you have bought a sample pack that everybody else is using, you know, like there's like this Slate snare that is so overused, it's crazy. So how do you make it your own? Well, what you can do is send out your samples into some guitar pedals and distort them or add a slapback delay or whatever you want, and then send that back into your computer and mix it in instead. So you can like kind of craft your own samples out of this, you know,
totally.
And really just kind of get a unique tone to mix in there, which can be really, really fun, because you will get bored if you only have like a limited amount of samples and you're kind of using those a lot. It you start noticing that your like drum mixes are getting too similar.
Oh yeah. Yeah, totally. I mean, there are sample packs that are not as obvious as others. So there are mm-hmm. some notorious samples that I can always immediately tell when people use them. But still, if you end up using the same samples all the time, it can be dangerous. And altering or changing those samples or adding, like, yeah, just making them into something new, unique, that is really a cool thing to do. Absolutely. I think there are also some like common examples, like just as with the lo-fi vocals or the radio voice vocals, there's something similar with drums, the lo-fi drum break or, sometimes it's intros and outros where people use it. Sometimes people use like a mono room mic and then they filter it and distort it and they have that going for a couple of bars or whatever. But instead of doing that, you can just send the whole kit or a balance that you want to have of the kit, and you can send that out and either like put it through some pedals and make it sound weird and distorted, or put it through a guitar amp and mic up the guitar amp, and like a guitar cab has this natural kind of filter, so it will sound a little lo-fi. You can distort it, you can EQ it, you can do all sorts of things, and just you can like manually make something like a filter sweep or something like that, so you could start really low and then slowly opening up to the break mm-hmm. or whatever. All these things that are much cooler to do if you do them manually with a pedal or piece of hardware instead of drawing a straight line in the DAW and doing an automation. So that's one thing I can think of, this lo-fi drum break thing, because although that is more unique than the radio voice thing, I've heard a couple of records where it sounds pretty similar and where it's like, okay, I know this effect. This, like, I know what's coming up. So, you know.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
It's worth mentioning, I think, that generally when you do this, you end up with like you end up sending out a mono signal and getting a mono signal back, because the guitar pedal will usually, some guitar pedals can do stereo, but generally you end up with like a mono thing, which can be just great for adding like a lot of punch and thickness to a drum kit. What are you normally like wanting to send out when you're reamping a drum, Benny?
Depends. For the lo-fi drum break, I usually want to send out a mono sum of the whole kit, and I just adjust to taste. So I will create a submix, a mono submix, and I will make it sound like a kit basically, and not just individual parts. So in that, it would be just a mono mix that I will send out, and if it's for the lo-fi drum break. But there are other examples where I would ream specific parts of the kit or a blend of specific parts. So for example, there is a thing that, I don't know if there's a name for it, but you could call it like re-rooming or re-room miking or whatever you want to call it, where you kind of send out the whole kit through speakers or a speaker into a room and then just put microphones in that room and capture that and use that as a room mic, instead of, like, for example, when you don't have enough inputs to record actual room mics, you can do that as a separate step. Or you can just take your drum recordings to a really exciting sounding place and do it there to capture the ambience. And that's much more unique and unpredictable than just using an impulse response or a reverb plugin or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's a really cool thing. And in that case, sometimes I include cymbals if I want to add like length to the cymbals, or if I want to have like more a natural room mic sound. But sometimes I just do the shells if I want to make them more explosive, or if I want to add length to the snare. So that could be an instance where I would just send out the shells, or even just samples, and just capture the energy and the explosiveness of the room for the snares, toms, and kicks, maybe.
Yeah, I really love the idea of the like re-room thing. I think that's just like the coolest idea. It's like anybody that's been to like a huge stadium show with like a really big sound system and heard like the drums being sound checked, and you're just like, whoa, like, man, I wish I could get my drums to sound like that. It's like, well, this is the kind of the easiest way to get there. It's like crank up a PA system that loud and mic it up, kind of thing. It can be really cool. I know that I think it was Bob Rock that like first popularized it, but we were talking before we recorded this about Machine as well, another mixer that we both love, who definitely does this pretty often as well. And our buddy Matt does it. I haven't actually done it yet, but I want to. But they'll kind of reamp in real time and send out like the kick and snare to a PA system, which is in the room with the drummer. as they play. So you're recording like room mics of a drummer playing and the whole kit and stuff, but there's like extra kick and snare just being shot out of these PA speakers at the same time, and it can sound pretty massive.
Yeah, that's such a cool concept, because what I was talking about is like after you recorded it, you send it out through the room and then reamp it basically, or re-mic it. But that's that concept of doing it like in real time is so cool to me, if you have the room and the PA system, because you can just make the actual performance in real time sounds so much more massive, and you can improve the like the cymbal to shell balance a lot. Mm-hmm. Because oftentimes when you put up like room mics, when a drummer plays, depending on how good they play, depending on how good the drummer is, you often end up with a cymbal mess and not much like explosive shells and stuff. And that can really be a problem. So if you want to compress that later, or it's like you want to get, you just have this massive cymbal mess, and it's going to sound harsh and washy and whatever. But if you can do the PA trick, you can add a lot of kick and snare and toms to the room, and the balance, like the ratio of the shells to cymbals, will be improved dramatically.
Yeah.
And yeah, and it just this, as you said, just the feeling of like air being moved and like the subwoofers and everything in the room, this can be so great, especially when the room is big and there is enough space to actually fit those low waves in there. Mm-hmm. But if that's the case, it's like a magical thing. So yeah, that's such a cool concept.
I was at a summit, a recording summit in Vegas, November, I guess. Yeah, feels like I'm like how, when was I allowed to travel last?
Yeah.
A long time ago now. But I was in Vegas for this recording summit, and Machine, the mixer we just mentioned that does this, was there, and he was doing an example on stage, and he pulled up this room mic set in this recording session, and it sounded awesome. My first thought was like, well, that sounds really balanced. Like, that's a great, they captured the kit really fully there. And he was like, this is pretty much worthless to me. And then he just like carved out all the cymbals. And I was like, okay, like he does things differently. Like he's like, he wanted literally zero cymbals. Yeah. And that's essentially what he was going through, was like, how did I like just demolish the cymbals out of these room mics kind of thing. But he's like, if I recorded this, it would not have been like this. And I'm like, okay, cool. Totally different way to think of things.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I meant. Like I sometimes do that as well, but then I do it after the fact, after recording, and I only send out the shells if I want that. Mm. But sometimes, and that's the more common thing for me, I guess, I want to have a kind of a balanced room mic thing, because I always feel, I don't know, I always feel like if it's just the shells and the cymbals are really dry, it kind of feels disconnected to me. I don't know, I just like the impression of a real kit in a room. And I heard A.L. Levy like on the URM podcast, and he's one of those guys who put up like who organized the summit you were talking about. I heard him refer to it as like drums in space, where you feel like there are individual parts of the kit in like some space, but not really together. And yeah, I don't like that as much. So I think that's what you get when you only do shells. But sometimes I do that as well if I want precise cymbals and just the explosiveness. So that's like...
Yeah, it all depends. Yeah, I should mention that like Machine, well, I think he's one of the best mixers around. He's got like... He's normally mixing quite heavy music. So like this wouldn't apply to a lot of music.
Yeah. And that's probably what it depends and what it comes down to. And I think that's worth mentioning. If you have slow... It can be heavy, but if you have slow, big sounding like drum patterns with a lot of space in between the hits, you can probably do the whole kit, and you can also have long cymbals, and it can be like this massive wall and this noisy thing. But if it's fast, heavy, technical stuff, like if you're doing like a fast death metal record or whatever, you probably don't want these long cymbals and these overlapping things and these long reverb tails and everything. Like you want to automate it so that in the breakdown or in a like a halftime part, you'll have more of the cymbal or more of the shell decay and sustain. And then when a fast double kick part or whatever comes in, you want to make it shorter. Most of the time, you pretty much don't want any cymbal sustain or unnecessary length there or any like muddiness there. And so in these genres, it's supposed to be pretty precise. And then I would be very careful what I would send to the room. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What we're trying to encourage with this episode is just creativity.
Yeah.
These aren't things that happen very often for me. I'm not normally needing to do these, but when I do, it's like the perfect solution, you know, and I'm just so glad that I went for it. So don't be afraid to have ideas that are literally outside of the box and into another box, a guitar pedal. So I don't know, that was a terrible punny thing.
But it's absolutely great. Like out of the box into another box is super great. Yeah, but that's basically what it comes down to. Yeah, and I think we should do that actually more often because, yeah, I do not do that on every production, but if there is the time and the budget and like, and if you record yourself, you probably have the time to do that, then it's so worth trying that because that's sometimes the stuff that cannot happen in a professional recording situation. If the budget is limited and you just have limited time, you can only do so much of that stuff, unfortunately. So you have the big advantage of just being able to try that because you're not paying for studio time if you do it on your own, right? So that could be a way to make DIY, like home recordings, sound so much more exciting and unique. And this could even like compensate for some like lacks of gear that you have available in your recording space. So you might be limited to your interface. You probably don't have racks of cool vibey outboard gear, but you can kind of compensate for that if you can just come up with unique, exciting things.
Yeah.
And so that's basically what we want to talk about here. Back to drums, I think. Another cool thing here with the drums is, so we have the lo-fi drum break. You can obviously distort drums. You can send stuff through pedals just as you can with vocals. Delays can sometimes be pretty cool, depending on the genre. But there are some grooves that, I mean, delays are by definition a rhythmic thing. And you can come up with pretty cool patterns and make the delay part of the drum groove, which can be awesome. So you can play with that. And then finally, there's a trick, and that's reamping snare drums specifically that I found really useful. So if you don't have a snare bottom mic, so if you have limited inputs on your interface and you cannot record a snare bottom, but you want to have the snap and the sound of the snares, you can record the drums without the snare bottom, and then you can place a speaker on your snare drum, like you put it on the snare drum, the speaker facing down on the better head. And then you reamp, you send out the snare through the speaker, through the output, and like feed it into the speaker, and then turn up the speaker, and the speaker will cause the snare drum to vibrate and resonate, and it can sound pretty snappy, pretty hard, depending on how loud it is and what it actually sounds like. And then you just mic the bottom side of the snare, and you can get creative with that. You can kind of come up with weird sounds, or you can just use it as a substitute for the actual snare bottom mic in a different take, but it will be totally in time with the actual performance. It will have all the dynamic variations. It will be very, depending on how the drum is tuned, but it works pretty well. So you get the same dynamics as in the original take, and you can replace a missing snare bottom mic that way. So that's just one thing I wanted to add here because it already saved a couple of productions for me. Yeah.
I love that idea. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all I have to say about drums, basically. Anything else that comes to mind, other than, like, there are no rules?
Other than that made me think up the most ridiculous idea that I actually would love to build. What if, this is so dumb, but would be unreal at the same time. What if you could do the same thing, you send out a signal, like, to reamp a snare bottom like you said, but it went to a machine that was triggered and then swung a drumstick at the exact same time to hit, like, so you could remic any drum. Wouldn't that be unreal?
Like,
you could change
robot?
The velocity of the MIDI notes, so you'd like actually just like re-record the snare, for example.
Like It'd a robot, like, or
yeah, like a robot, that would.
I'm gonna Google that right now. There has to be some sort of MIDI robot that you can trigger or whatever, a reamp or.
I mean, it would have to be so precise, right, to get the timing right. You would have to have like look ahead, and I can't even believe we're talking about this on here. Sorry, guys, I'm down the rabbit hole.
There is something actually. There is pretty weird looking DIY projects of people that built something like this, apparently. But there seems to be something. Like, just Google it. Look it up. There seems to be something. But if you can come up with something really cool, like an actual robot, that would be super awesome.
Oh yeah, some people are definitely getting onto something here. It looks pretty intense. Yeah, yeah. I'm gonna leave this to the professionals. But
yeah,
but maybe one day we'll be reamping performances with MIDI.
Well, that would be such that's such a great idea, such a great concept. I think if there was a solution that really worked well, we would know about it.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but yeah, I just love the idea. Like, honestly, there's so much you can do if you just think about that for a minute, and like it opens up a whole new world. Like using an already recorded performance and sending it through whatever you have available just gives you so many more options, and suddenly you're not limited to your like small interface anymore. Because initially you think like, I can't do a lot of the vibey stuff of the studios because I only have my interface and like two mics. But once you get that concept, you realize that you can do so much more because you can use your guitar pedals, you can use rooms. And even though it's inconvenient with like an interface without additional line inputs, you can still try it. Maybe, I don't know, find a way, use your PA or whatever to monitor it, and then just don't plug the speakers in and just find a way to get in and out of the computer. There is a way. And all of a sudden, you can use anything that has an input and an output in any room. You can overdrive an old PA system mixing desk or whatever. You can, like, I have an old tube radio here in my control room that has an input and an output. I could use that and put stuff through it and overdrive it. You can do all sorts of cool things, and you're not limited to your like boring interface anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just such a cool thing once you realize that. And also, that makes me think, while we are telling this, we are learning ourselves so much from this, and we should actually do that more often, because
we definitely should.
We get the concept, and we hear all these stories from friends and colleagues and other musicians and stuff. But as we said, unless it's our own project, sometimes time is just limited, and you can't do a lot of these things, unfortunately. So maybe we should like preach to ourselves here and just do that more often and try out things more often. But there are, in my case at least, some instances where I mean the drum re-rooming thing, I did that quite a lot actually. And there is one story where it is about guitars, so I wanted to save that for the end here, but I wanted to share it with you because it was really fun. One time I had a band here, a rock and roll band, that had a part where like the song was about drinking and about like a person having like alcohol problems, so like a pretty cliche rock and roll lyric and song, and they had a part in it, and it goes through the ups and downs of like people getting drunk and then being sober again and all everything that goes into that. And there's a part in there like the lowest point of the song and the story basically, and they wanted that part to sound really really disgusting and like to feel you wanted the listener to feel like they would have to throw up, kind of, you know, like really this disgusting hungover feeling. They wanted to capture that in the sonically in the song. So we thought what we could do, and we ended up, they played like a riff with a bottleneck thing, a weird like slidey bottleneck pattern, and then we reversed it so it sounded even more like a little weird and like unstable, and then we reamped that. And we put an actual glass of beer in front of the speaker and put an SM57 inside a plastic bag and like dumped that into the glass of beer and reamped the reversed bottleneck thing that came out of the speaker through the glass of beer. And that wasn't like weird enough. So we took a straw and we like blew air into the glass and made bubbles and made it sound like weird moving and with the bubbly sound and everything. And that's what ended up being the lead part in that riff. And if you don't know the story, you cannot tell what it actually is. It just sounds like a really like weird, wobbly, like uncomfortable sounding melody thing. I don't know. So it basically did exactly what they wanted it to do. And it was so much fun. And yeah, that was a reamping thing. We took the original part, reversed it, reamped it, put it through a glass of beer, made some extra noise, and that's what ended up being on the record. So
perfect.
Stuff like that. And that's like the fun stuff. But yeah. See what you can come up with, see what you can do with all that information. And I would love to get more songs
where like more multi-tracks to mix where people actually committed to stuff like that or send it along with the dry tracks. So I'd love to see that happening because it's so much fun and I'd just like to hear unique things.
Because it just kind of like shows that there's a vision involved in the production already and something to get on board with.
Yeah, totally. So if you come up with cool stuff and if you have some cool ideas for this, you should totally go to the Facebook community, the Self-Recording Band Facebook community, and just share it there because it can be really fun. I remember when I did the beer thing, I shared it in a Facebook group and like I got, I don't know, 100 comments or something and people were like asking for the files and talking about it a lot. So it's a topic that like where people like what that people just like to talk about and exchange ideas because it's exciting and fun. And just go to the community and start a conversation there. And usually things get even more creative then because once someone starts, others like pick up on that those ideas and just add their own take. And yeah, it can get into a really inspiring conversation. And usually those conversations end up in cool new things and cool new ideas that you can try. So go to the selfrecordingband.com/community. This will direct you to, this will forward you to the Facebook group. And then just join the group if you're not there already and post ideas, post weird things you reamped. Yeah, and let us hear what you came up with.
Yeah, not even just new things. Like if you have stories of stuff you've done and files you want to share from old projects, we'd love that as well.
Yeah. The beauty of this is even if you share what you did, it will still be unique because nobody will be able to exactly do the same thing. That's the beauty of this. Like if you did what we just told you, then it will be unique because you are the only person in that room with that piece of gear or that chain of pedals or whatever. So even if you give away your quote unquote secrets, like it will still be unique. And that's the difference to a plugin preset or something like that. So just share it and see what you can come up with. Awesome.
Right on.
All right. Anything else to add, Malcolm? Are we done?
No, I think that's a good good kickstart into some creative ideas people can try out. And I really hope people do jump into this. Like, even if you don't have guitar pedals, you know somebody that does, that you can borrow some. You know, have fun. Give it a shot.
All right. That's it. Okay. Thanks for listening.
See you next week.
Hey friend, thanks again for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed this one, just know that this is just a tiny fraction, a small taste of what we can actually do to help you completely transform your recordings and mixes forever. If you are really serious about your music, if you want to reach your goals as a self-recording artist, then please apply now for the Self-Recording Syndicate, our coaching program that takes you from where you are to being able to completely independently produce and release exciting sounding music forever. If you join that program, you're going to be part of a very, very passionate, dedicated, committed group of self-recording artists from all around the world, and you're going to get a roadmap, guidance, feedback, personal access to me and the team. We're going to do everything, literally everything we can to help you make the best recordings you can possibly make. And it all starts with a free first call, completely free, no strings attached. Best case scenario, we're going to end up working together and we're going to completely transform the way your music sounds. Worst case scenario, you're going to get an hour of free coaching and an action plan that you can then take and implement on your own. So if that sounds interesting to you, get started now with your first completely free call by going to theselfrecordingband.com/call or just click the link in the show notes. See you next week.